Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Authors on the Air's Global Radio Network is proud to welcome to the show Justice with a Snap with Judge David Young. Today, Judge David's guests are Marilyn Belban from The League of Women Voters and Shelley Levin from Emily's List. Our topics of discussion today are the Voters' Rights Act, what's happening with the Russian Olympics. We're going to talk about dumping Rick Scott for Florida governor and many other topics. And Judge David Young, freshly back from his vacation in Tanzania, is going to talk about that, the bar conference in Daytona Beach, and we have our segment, Ask the Judge. So without further ado, here's Judge David Young. Judge, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be back. I understand that we had a very able Steve Cody. I heard he was terrific. Did he meet your standards?
He was great. I'm very happy with the way the show turned out. He had his guests all lined up. Everybody talked. He's a very able and worthy substitute while you're not here. Although, I don't know, I'm your assistant, boss. I like it when you're here.
I understand. But let me get the numbers out at 347-633-9609. That's 347-633-9609. I want to talk a little bit about my vacation because it was absolutely incredibly interesting.
I bet it was.
In Tanzania, who the hell ever thought I'd ever be in Tanzania?
Right?
You know? And I've got to tell you, let's start out with the trip getting there, okay? If that's not enough to make you drink on an airplane, nothing is. We started off going to London, okay? For some reason, right. Scott wanted to get everything done in one day. So we went to London, which is a 7-hour flight, spend the day
right.
in London. Then we were with his godson and his family, so we had to go to the London School of Economics. Those are really exciting people. And then after we did the London School of Economics, we then walked around London. We saw a couple things, and I love London, mind you.
You've been there before, haven't you, Judge? You've been to London quite a few times, haven't you?
I have, and you know, one of my highlights in London is going to Harrods and having a jelly donut in memory of my mother. One of the few foods that my mother would go crazy over were the jelly donut at Harrods. And I got to tell you, it was better than most of my sexual encounters. It was that good.
Oh, my God.
I'm kidding.
You the shopping queen? You did not go in there and buy things other than a jelly donut?
Oh, honey, please. Of course I bought things. On the way back.
Okay.
I'll get into that story in a minute. It's a story. So then after Harrods, we went to Indian food, that great Indian food in London.
Yes,
and then we caught another flight for 9 hours. 9 hours,
ugh.
I'm on an airplane.
Ugh.
Ethiopian Air. I thought to myself, oh, my God, is this going to be an experience of a lifetime? I need drugs, heavy drugs. And I'm a judge.
Oh,
not
no.
a good thing. But
how
Indian is a wonderful drug. I got to tell you, we were in first-class business class on Ethiopian Air, as I was on American Airlines, and it was fabulous. Brand new planes. Okay, so the planes that they used were the type of airplanes that had fires on them in San Francisco and London. Luckily, nothing happened. I was very happy.
Absolutely.
Flight, beautiful service. It was wonderful. So then after 9 hours, we land in Addis Ababa. I think I pronounced right, Ethiopia. Chris, I gotta tell you, what a goddamn depressing country Ethiopia is. There were so many women wrapped with babies begging and children begging, and I'm thinking to myself, it was just, your heart goes out. And I'm thinking, where in the hell is the world community in taking a cause?
It's sad, isn't it, Judge? It's sad.
It's horrible.
And, you know, Ethiopia used to be the heartland of all of Africa. It was lush, green, verdant, and other countries came in and stripped it of all its riches, and that's what they left behind. And so the people have suffered so greatly at the hands of others trying to grab power and control. And it's unfortunate when you consider the origins of man supposedly are in that region, and it just is heartbreaking.
It is absolutely heartbreaking. But I did meet Lucy, who at one point was recognized as the first human being on Earth
On Earth, right?
We saw her skeleton, and we had an incredible tour. And you know, Lucy hit on me from the. You know, she said, "Ooh, David, you're really hot, and you did justice with a snap blog talk radio. I really like you." And I said, "Sweetheart, you're barking up the wrong tree. You know what I mean?"
There you go. Now, let me ask you about Lucy. Is she tiny? Was she as tiny as I think she is? She's very small, right?
Very, very small. And they recently found another skeleton that's older than Lucy.
Really?
Okay. Now, I will give a $25 Starbucks gift card. If anyone can call the show at 347-633-9609 and tell me where they got the name Lucy.
Okay.
347-633-9609. Tell me where they got the name Lucy, and you'll get a gift card from Starbucks.
How about that? Nothing wrong with that. You can Skype in, too. At Authors on the Air is our name for Skype. I'm waiting by the switchboard to take your calls for Judge David Young on Justice with a Snap.
So tell me what else happened. After we saw Lucy, we had a wonderful dinner in Ethiopia, and I think I put some pictures on Facebook. And we went to a lunch and a dinner. This dinner had music and had Ethiopian artists, and it was truly fabulous. We then had a 1 a.m. flight from Ethiopia to Mount Kilimanjaro. And
wow.
We got into Kilimanjaro about 3:30 in the morning until we got our luggage and cleared customs. We got to Arusha in Tanzania, which was a very nice lodge, and the next day we started our safari. And one of the things about the safari that was really cool, besides seeing all the animals, which if you looked at my Facebook page, you see them, is we had a chance to see the Maasai, the warriors, and how they lived,
yes,
and how they interacted, and, you know, fascinating. And as I told somebody today, I said it was truly life-changing in the sense that, picture this, Starbucks in the going to Publix, getting your dinner, going to restaurants and ordering what you want to order, going into your refrigerator and have it filled with fruits and vegetables and meats and turkeys and fowl and whatever.
Right.
They don't have that. They have nothing.
No.
Zero. I posted pictures of two boys who must have been 12 or 13, and they made jewelry, and I bought a piece of jewelry from them, and I asked them, I said, "How old are you?" They didn't know how old they were. They had no idea how old they were.
It's sad. I saw those pictures you posted today. Judge, we have a call. Do you want me to answer the phone, or are you going to get
it
yourself?
You can answer. That'd be great.
Thank you. You're on Justice with a Snap. Who's speaking?
Hi, this is Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good, sir. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you very much. Do you have the answer for me?
I want to rise to your challenge. I believe when they found the bones, the song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds by the Beatles was playing in the background.
You are just so smart. Do you like Starbucks?
Love Starbucks.
So, then go, you'll buy me some. I'm kidding.
Actually, I'll take you out for a cup of coffee.
Steve, it's my treat. Tell me, how did you know? Did you look it up on the internet, or did you just, because you're a brilliant guy, knew that?
I am just such a wonk that stuff like that just sticks in my head.
Really?
Really.
That and the latest porn site you were on, I suspect.
No, actually, I'm sitting here rendering pictures for a book that I'm working on. And listening to the show.
Exciting. Well, hold on. What kind of book you're working on depends how exciting it is. If it's a book
I don't know if you saw the paper this weekend, but I'm doing a children's book with Natasha Sejas.
Excellent. I knew that.
And,
I knew that, she told me.
This is
Steve Cody Online, who is my co-host, and took over us, and we're glad you're on the air.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And you did a great job, by the way.
Well, thank you. I was going to call in when you got to the discussion about voting rights, but when I heard the Lucy in the Sky... fact that I knew, it was like, gee, I finally know. I'm like a stopped clock. I'm right twice a day. So
that's my line.
I figured I would call in. So,
We're glad you did. Well, hold on and stay with us while Judge David continues.
Sure.
We're talking about Ethiopia and Judge David's vacation. If you want to get in on the conversation, it's 347-633-9609. Judge?
Well, so then after the conversation, Steve, why don't you call back with voting when we talk about voting rights, which I think your input is going to be crucial, actually.
I'll talk to you then. Take care.
Sounds great. Thank you very much. Talk to you in a few minutes.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
That was Steve Cody, who's just a great guy. So then we went on the safari, and to see the animals in their natural habitat was absolutely, you know, okay, I thought Lion Country Safari was their natural habitat. Far be it for me to know these things.
Right.
But to see the family, and I got to tell you, every elephant, giraffe, baboon, other types of monkeys, birds. You saw them in a familial environment. You had mother, father taking care of babies, looking out, fighting for kids. It was, I guess, unbelievable, just absolutely incredible. And to see them react or not react to us was very cool, actually. Although, I got to say, a baboon story.
Tell.
We're sitting having lunch and minding my own business. Scott and I are talking, and there's another table that I met, and this couple was a lawyer working for some international group in Tanzania dealing with, he used to work at The Hague, and it was really interesting people. And all of a sudden, I'm finished. My lunch is already in the garbage. A baboon jumps on the table, tries to get some lunch, and Scott camera bag, yes. And he was followed by two other baboons who jumped on the table. When they saw that there was nothing in our picnic table, they jumped to the next picnic table, and they were smart because there was all the food was there. They took all the food and jumped, and they almost took a baby, and the parents were too worried about the food than the baby, which I can understand. And it was absolutely crazy. It was like a hit and run. And they were,
how large were these creatures, Judge?
They were adult baboons. We were told by the guides that they target white people because they know that the white people are the tourists and they have the food. And the Africans who are there, they have rocks and they're close by and they start throwing rocks at these baboons to scare them to they would go away. It was wild. It was absolutely unbelievably wild. But
oh my
cool
gosh. Now, this is obviously an open air restaurant that you were at or cafe or something. And
no,
I'm assuming
no, no,
that
no,
they
no, no.
This
is in the national park.
Oh,
in,
when you're having your lunch.
Park.
Okay. Oh. So this was kind of an expected thing then. This happens often. They know to warn all the tourists, obviously.
They do. These baboons are very smart. They're smarter than the Republicans in Congress, I'll tell you that, because they know how to get things done, those baboons. The asshole Republicans, John Boehner wouldn't know how to get things done if it smacked him in the face.
I'm telling you. Are you saying we should recruit a baboon? Are you saying we should recruit a baboon? Speaking of, that conversation is coming up later in the program when we discuss the current state of our gubernatorial mess in Tallahassee. Am I right?
Absolutely. We're going to have a really exciting
speaker. We do want to hear more about your vacation, Judge. So tell us what happened after a safari.
Well, let me give the number up, 347-633-9609. That's 347-633-9609. If you have any questions about a safari, if you ever take one, I'd love to hear from you. So Scott did something that I didn't do. Warriors, I forgot what they called them, the Bushmen. First of all,
uh-huh,
I hear the
uh-huh.
word Bush, I get nauseous. Okay, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a gay thing, but I just get nauseous. Bush. Or think about George.
There you go.
So the Bushmen are tribal. And if you want to eat, you have to kill for your meal. And I said to Scott, you know, I am not going to watch an animal get killed. I don't want to see a kill. I don't want to see any blood or guts. I want to do all my shooting with my camera. So
That's right.
Slept late, and Scott went with the Bushman. And he met these bunch of people. And it's really sexist because the men do the hunting and the women do the gathering of the roots and the vegetables and all that other stuff. So he went with about 20 men with bows and arrows. The bows and arrows, they made themselves. And Scott thought to himself, they're not going to catch any animals for dinner. They're going to starve these poor people.
Sure.
They ended up killing three baboons. Three baboons they killed.
Okay.
With a bow and arrow. They just shot them
right in the heart.
They had a whole thing. They had a dancing, and then they had shouting, and then they had the gathering, and it was meticulous the way they operated. It was truly impressive.
But you had to eat that?
Honey, I didn't eat any of that nonsense, and neither did Scott.
Just
but what
me.
They did was
take
they
it
killed
to McDonald's.
They killed. It probably is. They killed the baboon, and then the three baboons, and then they made a fire from sticks. From sticks they made a fire. Those people can do anything. And they cooked the baboon, skin and all, fur and all. And they broke off, after they cooked it, they broke off the pieces and they ate legs. And there was a young boy who ate the head of a baboon. And he said it was one of the most disgusting things he's ever seen in his entire life. And thank God, they offered him some baboon meat. And I thought to myself, the lips that touch baboon lips, baboon meat will never touch mine, I guarantee you. I don't care.
Somehow I sense he knew that.
Trust me, but, you know, not live ones.
Oh, my Lord.
No, it was unbelievable. But, you know, he declined. And after they did this, after they ate, they had a ceremony, like a thank God ceremony, where they danced the hora. He said, we were jumping up and down like dancing the hora. Okay.
So you and Scott are the only ones in the world I know who would find Jewish Bushmen. How likely is that?
Oh, you know, what can I say?
The Hasidic Bushmen tribe.
Then we went into this village where the Maasai have several villages. They're villagers. And I posted some pictures today. They live in ways which you just can't believe people are living. And I went to two of them. One of them, I went into the chief's quarters where he had two wives. And there's like a little room with like a animal skin over some wood as a bed. And they have a little fire pit in the middle and a little sitting room as a closet. And that's where the chief lived. And the people don't bathe. The people don't have any grooming facilities, no bathrooms there. And it's a complete way of life that was so foreign to me that I was just fascinated with it.
Wow.
And that's when I thought to myself, you know, maybe we're wrong. Maybe we who have all the luxuries that we have are not living the right way. Maybe we should live off the earth, maybe better quality of life. I thought of that for 10 seconds and I said, screw that, baby. Give me my Starbucks.
Yeah.
I'm not giving up that Starbucks at all. And then we went to a school, which I put on a little show for.
There's a lot to be said for, but there's a lot to be said for the simplicity of life. It's the way they know, isn't that correct?
Absolutely, and they're happy. They're absolutely happy.
Aww.
And you know, who's happy today? Who? Show me somebody who's happy with life, who doesn't have issues. I'm going to make a mortgage payment. I've got to make a life payment. How am I going to afford my cable TV bill? I can't afford my kids' education. I've got student loans to pay. These people don't have those worries.
Yeah.
They know there's food. They know there's shelter. They know they have people who are there in their lives. They're happy. So we're the schmucks.
Well, there you go.
So we went to a school.
There's a lot to be said for a simpler lifestyle, isn't there, Judge?
Absolutely, there really is. We did go to one of their, they had a kindergarten, and they had a little child that counted by tens to 100, and of course we gave money for that. I also brought them pens because I'm told that they needed pens. So I brought pens for the whole village. And, you know, the government's now starting to get in and say, okay, these are certain requirements. And these villagers, these messiahs are saying, you know, don't fuck with us. You know, leave us alone. We've been living this way for thousands upon thousands of years. And, you know, there's no, we're not going to listen to you. So it's going to be interesting in Tanzania and other places in Africa to see exactly what's going on and how, you know, how they're going to react to change. If change, you know, ever really occurs. I don't know if it ever will, Jessica. I really don't know.
Well, we don't want it to, though, do we, Judge? Isn't it better for these people to live and discover things on their own? And if they want to accept that, let them accept it.
I think so. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And like I said, I think people's happiness is truly important. So we did the Serengeti. We did all these other several other parks. We finished the trip, and we get to Arusha. Arusha is in Tanzania, one of the coolest cities I've ever been to, and I really wish I could have spent more time there. It's not that it's cosmopolitan, but the artwork and the craft work and the people who were there were amazing. I had one of the best Indian meals I've ever had in Arusha.
Wow!
And we bought a lot of stuff. We had to buy a bag to put all the stuff we bought in, all this artwork, this craft work. And so we check in the airport, Arusha. Again, we were on Ethiopian Air. The nice lady checked me in from Arusha in Tanzania all the way to Miami. We get on the airplane at 5:30 in the afternoon, takes off on time, beautiful flight, brand new jet, first class, terrific. We get into Ethiopia at 8 o'clock. We have a 3:30 flight, so of course I booked a hotel, so we get a couple hours of shut-eye. Get to the airport an hour and a half early at 2 in the morning. Flight doesn't take off to 5:30. I get a little nervous. It's a 10-hour flight, sleep on the plane. We pull into our gate as my American Airlines flight from London back to Miami is pulling out. So
oh, no.
David missed an airplane. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, they have great shopping at Heathrow Airport. Terrific shopping at Heathrow Airport. So I'm kind of okay with
shopping,
this thing, actually.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. I'm happy. So I stand by for a flight, a 12:15 flight. I couldn't get on. This real bitchy woman was working with me, and she was not very nice, and came back, and luckily there was a gay boy who was sitting behind the counter, flirted with him a little bit, and I said, honey, listen to me. And Scott is with me, so I got to behave myself. I said, listen to me. You can route me to Boston, okay, and I can go to Boston, and then I can spend the night in Boston and get to Miami. I'm British here. Can you do that for me? After that bitch said she couldn't route me to Boston. He says, oh, of course. So went to Boston. He said, oh, your luggage will get there. No, don't worry. I'm sitting on British Air 747 up on the top deck, a cool airplane. I've never flown on a top deck before. Get to Boston. And I got to tell the listeners, British Air is a fabulous airline. The food was terrific. The stewards were fantastic. Tea was kind of cool at 4 o'clock, and the scones were delicious. And we land. And I know, as sure as my name is David Harris Young from North Miami Beach, that my luggage was not going to make it on that plane. Nope.
Of course
no
not.
No luggage. Of course not. Okay, so but I, knowing that, knowing how clairvoyant that I am,
right.
I had a 3-hour layover in Terminal 5 that has all these great stores. So I went to
shopping
Harrods
queen.
And I shopping. I was very happy. And,
I'm
and
sure
I did
you
something
were.
To Harrods. No, God, yes. And I did something I'd never done before. I actually took a shower by myself. Alone, people don't start thinking, oh, he's already cheating on Scott. It was some British Bobby. I don't know if his name was Bobby or Paul. Anyway, I regress. I took a shower in the club. Very nice. I was refreshed, and I made it to Boston with no luggage. But new clothes, so I was fine.
There you go.
And the next,
has your luggage shown up yet, or is it still traveling?
Supposedly it's going to be in Miami today, although I'm in Daytona Beach, and this is a whole other story. 347-633-9609, 347-633-9609. Authors on the Air, Blog Talk Radio, call me. Let's talk about Daytona Beach, shall we?
Oh, my gosh. Now, this is where, is this the Fifth Circuit is having their little conference going on up there or something?
This is circuit, all the circuit judges from around the state of Florida, they have a conference. Why in God's name they think this godforsaken place, I have no idea. We have Murray. Murray's with us, our dog. And I walk the dog 3 times a day, and I gotta tell you something. I feel like a goddamn Adonis. I feel my body is so far better than all these fat slobs walking around with no shirt on, men and women, mind you. My confidence level, I almost got naked walking across the main street today at Daytona Beach.
Oh, boy.
Don't they have mirrors here? I mean, seriously, don't people look in the mirror and say, this one woman, I swear to you, was wearing this two-piece thing. It wasn't even a bathing suit. The fat is hanging out over, and she has a tattoo, like a say tattoo on her fat. I'm thinking to myself, really? Huh, honey?
Ew.
You need to wear a caftan, okay? Omar the Tentmaker made that outfit for you, obviously, or you need to hire him to make an outfit for you. Just absolutely disgraceful.
Oh, no. Well, maybe that's why that's why the conference is in Daytona Beach, so other people don't, you know, I don't know, see anyone.
Oh, God. But they have a Starbucks here at the hotel. They have a Starbucks, so I'm very happy. I'm content.
There you go. Well, and your husband's off doing his thing, and you don't have to worry about it, correct?
Oh, absolutely. He's going to be he's an officer in the conference. He's going to be chair of the conference in probably 6 years. It's 2-year terms, so actually 5 years. So that's a good thing. If you talk about a really man and woman who've dedicated their lives to the law and to doing the right thing, and most of them do the right thing in the circuit court. That they work hard. The judges, for the most part. Most of them work really hard, and they all come from a good place, except those appointed by Rick Scott. But that's a whole other story.
Well, you know, we're glad that Scott is where he is, but, you know, and it's important for us to have fair and impartial and compassionate judges, but that doesn't excuse anything else he's done. Not Scott. I mean, not your Scott, but Rick Scott. Yeah.
Oh, we'll talk about him when our guest gets here. But one thing that happened in Daytona, which really disturbed me, I said to the judge's wife, you know, is it me or do I feel that the city has a little bit of racism involved in it and a little bit of intolerance? Because I just witnessed some things that I found a little bit disturbing. And she said, you know, David, I'm so glad you mentioned it. A wife of a judge and the judge and the child were in a store, and he had a Trayvon Martin hoodie on, which they call him now, and it doesn't say Trayvon Martin on it, but he just had a hoodie. And this store owner was following this child around the store like a detective.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
and the
no.
mother said to the store owner, he's a good boy, he wouldn't take anything. And the store owner started to bumper and stutter and, you know, probably craps in his pants when he got called on. What kind
that breaks
of
my heart
that,
to hear
then?
That. What kind of stuff is that? That's just wrong, you know? Judge, we're going to take a station break, let you stand up and straighten out your slacks there. Listeners, you are on the Office on the Air Global Radio Network listening to Justice with a Snap with Judge David Young. In the next segment of the show, we're going to be talking to some guests about the Voting Rights Act. We are also going to be talking about the gubernatorial race that's taking place in Florida, as well as the Olympics that are taking place in Russia. Our guests include Shelley Levin from Emily's List and Marilyn Balban from the League of Women Voters. If you'd like to join the conversation, please do. You can call in at 347-633-9609 or feel free to Skype. Our Skype name is authorsontheair.com. Don't forget, for upcoming shows throughout the network, you can go to www.authorsontheair.com. And now we're back with Judge David Young and Justice with a Snap. Judge?
Welcome back. Well, you know, I want to shift topics a little bit and talk about the Olympics because there's something going on in Russia that just absolutely pisses me off to no end. And if you look at the history, it's mind-boggling, is it?
It is. It's mind-boggling. In this day and age, and you know, you'd think with, I mean, they've made some strides, but for crying out loud, talk about a giant leap back.
If you look at history, when things go bad economically for a country, they need a scapegoat. It started in Nazi Germany, and it's repeating itself in Russia. And I got to tell you, the assholes who are in power, the bigots, the racists, the homophobes, the anti-Semites that are in power in Russia, it's going to, unless checked, it's going to be an absolutely disastrous situation. For those of you who do not know what I'm talking about, Russia made it a crime, which punishable by imprisonment, to be gay. And the issue came up, the Olympics are going to be there. What happens if you have a gay Olympian? Is the person going to be able to do his or her sport? Is the person going to be able to bring his boyfriend or girlfriend, or is everyone going to go back in the closet? And it's very interesting, Jessica, to hear the response from not only the Russian government, but also from some of the Olympic hopefuls. And there is a real divergence in it. It's really depending upon, you know, your perspective. And after we take the next call, in the next segment, I want to talk more about it. Because
all
I
right,
think it's something we need
second,
to learn
we'll
about.
Get our call. Good afternoon. You're on Justice with a Snap with Judge David Young. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Shelley Levin, David.
Hey, Shelley. How are you?
I'm great. How are you going? How's everything going?
Everything is going great. We're just talking about all different types of things. My trip to Tanzania, talking about the Russians. We're talking now about Shelley Levin and about Florida Waterland Legacy Campaign in the Florida governor's race, which I know you're very passionate about both subjects.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always love talking about Florida politics. It's really very, very interesting, isn't it, living here in Florida?
my father said to me the other day, he said, you know, sometimes it's just embarrassing to tell people you live in this state. I said, you know, Dad, I completely understand that.
Well, as I said to somebody that I talked to, David, it could be worse. We could live in Texas.
Oh, my God. The guy that wants to take over from Rick Perry has an IQ of Rick Perry's shoe size, which is not too big in any area from what I understand.
Oh, it's really – I think a lot of people have lost their mind. But hopefully what's going to happen in 2014 and leading up to it is that in Florida, at least, everybody's going to regain their sanity here because there's great opportunities to do that and do some really good things for the state.
Before we talk about the opportunity, let's talk about Rick Scott for a few moments and his latest controversy with the Florida Education Commissioner. Why don't you tell everyone what's going on there and what one of his fine appointments did when he was voted out of office in Indiana?
You mean Tony Bennett, huh?
Not the singer either.
No. Definitely not the singer. Well, unfortunately, Tony Bennett decided that he was going to help out one of his charter school buddies and change the way that you did the grading of the schools in order that his charter school buddy's school wouldn't get such a low rating. And we know what happens when you do that. Thankfully, Tony is on his way out. But I think, David, it exemplifies the problems that are going on here in Florida, that and what Rick Scott has done in bringing people into this state from other places where there have been issues in other places, not really vetting them well, and then having them kind of run hog wild. To use an interesting expression for a vegan in the state. So that's I'm giving you the very small, very simple explanation of who Tony Bennett was and why he's on the way out.
Okay. Well, what Tony Bennett did was one of the main benefactors to the state GOP owned a charter school. And the charter school was a failing school, was a C school, and because some fancy mathematical work that Tony Bennett performed on the school made it from a C school automatically to an A school. When the state of Indiana investigated, they saw that it was done inappropriately, and Bennett was doctoring the grades to help a political contributor. And this guy loses an election, right? Shelley, he lost an election to be education commissioner, and what does our governor, who has about as much ethics as Al Capone, what does he do? He puts him in charge of education. That really sends a message to our young people, like, ooh, hard work, honesty, morality, dedication really pays off, doesn't it? No, you have to be a crook like Rick Scott and by Tony Bennett and be ethically challenged to make it in this life. The message is absolutely disgraceful, I think.
Well, I agree that the message is disgraceful, but David, this is not something new, and this is just a symptom, another example of the problem that has been going on with this administration since Rick Scott was elected. He just decided that he wanted to be governor, and he decided that he wanted to buy the election, and he capitalized on an electoral climate that was, as an understatement, difficult for Democrats and progressives, and here he stands. Tony Bennett is just another example of what he does. I mean, he doesn't have a lieutenant governor right now.
You know, so the listeners will know, Shelley ran Alex Singh's campaign for governor. And it was amazing to me, as I was campaigning for Alex to be our governor, that people said to me, well, they didn't really find her warm. They didn't really like her very much. She wasn't someone that they found endearing. You know, I want to say, you're not going to fuck the governor, sweetheart. You're going to want the governor to lead us. Don't you understand that this is not a popularity contest for prom king or queen? This is for the governorship. And they found Rick Scott appealing? Really?
Well, David, that's how we got George Bush. Remember that one? They wanted to have a beer with George Bush. But now I think a lot of those people that said that to you are very unhappy. The buyer's remorse in this state is unbelievable. Really unbelievable.
You know,
all across the state.
But he's gonna put in $100 million. His political action committee raised $14 million. They are going to bring in this state more money than you could think of to tout his economics, to tout his jobs program, to tout his giving teachers extra money. They're gonna make him look like a prince. How do we combat that?
Well, that's you bring up some really good points, because that is the dilemma. If you look at the polling in some of the recent polling, and they're certainly not polling, in the middle of the summer where nobody's in Florida. But if you look at the recent polling, and you can see that his favorability rating almost, it was in the Quinnipiac poll, was almost even. I mean, and what they say is it's still pretty low, but he was in such bad shape before that, that he had no place but to go up. And that's the dilemma that Florida voters are facing. They want to change. The polls show that they want to change. But in these kind of campaigns, what ends up happening is the governor is going to run a campaign against whomever it is that's going to be basically, I'm the devil you know, and I'm better than the devil that you don't know. Or, depending upon if it's a candidate that has run before, I would think that he's going to say, I came in and I created all these jobs, which, of course, we know he didn't create. But we have an economy that is better in Florida than I found it. I'm responsible for it. And anybody that was unlucky enough to have been serving when the economy tanked in Florida, that they should be held entirely responsible for the entire meltdown in this country. And therefore, you need to give me another term.
And talking about the 700,000 jobs promise, let me read what Truthometer, which is a political neutral group, has to say. Scott said the said the state is already almost halfway to our 2010 goal of creating 700,000 jobs in 7 years. By his preferred measure since taking office, 700,000 jobs, regardless of normal growth, he's in the ballpark. By the measure he asked Floridians to hold him accountable to, 700,000 jobs on top of $1 million jobs normal growth, he has still quite a long way to go. We rate his claim is mostly false. So yeah, you're right. He's going to try to, with his $100 million that he's going to put into this campaign, he's going to try to manipulate it. He's going to try to say, well, the Florida voters are really stupid. I think I can get them to believe anything. And you know, he might be right.
Well, he might be right, but I would prefer to think that the Democrat is not going to need dollar per dollar to fight him. I think the political environment that the Democrat, whoever the Democratic nominee is, and you know, obviously that's the big question that we're all
right.
dealing with at this point and are probably going to be dealing with for the next few months as we end the summer here and start the fall, which will likely be when the real political season, you know, begins here for the Democratic nomination. But that person is really going to be able to capitalize on a political environment that is much more healthy and helpful to the Democratic candidate. I don't think, I mean, what we saw all over the country in 2010, the fact that Alex Sink lost by only 60,000 votes in a state where the next candidate's down ballot from her lost in double digits. Not in terms of double-digit votes, but I mean in double-digit percentages. And Ted Strickland, the incumbent governor of Ohio, was defeated. You had people defeated all over the country. The Democratic nominee, whoever it may be, is not going to face that kind of really horrible political environment. And it is extremely possible that Barack Obama will be welcomed into this state. And we'll be able to campaign in this state with that candidate in a way that that he could not do in 2010.
Well, who will the candidates be, Shelley?
Well, you know, there are a host of people that are looking at it. Clearly, the big three that are up there I'll do it in alphabetical order for you, David.
Okay.
Charlie Crist, Bill Nelson, and Alex Sink. Those are of the three that are there. Those are the three, and possibly, I mean, with. You could say, although I don't look at him as a candidate right now, Dan Gelber, but those are the three that have run statewide. Two of them, of course, have won statewide. Charlie, of course, lost statewide in the same election that Alex lost. But you would have to look at the three of them and say, Florida is a tremendous state with complicated messaging. It requires that you have a campaign that is a very sophisticated campaign that is capable of raising large amounts of money and get a lot of assistance from groups both inside and outside of the state. And each one of those three has that capability to do that. Anybody else? It's a little longer of a shot.
And do you think that Nan Rich has no shot whatsoever? Could she be like the Bob Graham of his day, and gaining the support of the party liberals and catapulting her to a surprise victory?
I think that Nan Rich, it's been posed to me I've had some interesting conversations about Nan, who I think is a very smart woman and has been running very hard for quite a while. She's been running in a less traditional manner than I think what the other three have been used to running. But it's been posed to me the potential that if she were to run if it was a primary, and she was, and she will be on the ballot presumptively since she has announced as a candidate in that primary ballot, that the work that she has done engaging the grassroots base of this party could very potentially net a primary win for her, depending upon who the candidate was that she would be running against and whether there was any controversy about the candidate. I worry out loud with you, David, that we're talking about a time that is very different than when Bob Graham ran. Now, granted, Rick Scott did his kind of he's done his work days and he rode around in his truck in the just like Scott Brown did in his Senate race when he rode around in his red truck. Rick Scott had his truck that he rode around in 2010. Nonetheless, when you run that kind of a grassroots kind of campaign, I mean, Bob Graham had money. When you run that kind of a grassroots campaign, unless you have a lot of money behind you, it's not an easy campaign to win in a state like this. It just isn't easy, and because you have got to, and I'm not looking at the numbers, David, but you've got to win the independents. You have to.
No question about it. Could she be setting herself up for lieutenant governor, along with Charlie Crist?
I'm sure she could. I think if you probably asked her today, she would say, I'm running for governor. But frankly, I would think that I would be very surprised if Charlie Crist reached out to Nan Rich to be his lieutenant governor, that she would not be, you know, beholden to sit down and really think it through. Because I believe the thing about Nan Rich is – I believe that she really cares about the state and that if she is running for very pure reasons to try to do what is best for the state, it's still Florida is very tough politically and it is not for the faint-hearted or the weak to run in Florida statewide.
You know, when I saw Nan at an event last year, she was going to run, and I said, I have just one question. Can you kick Rick Scott in the balls and really mean it? And she said, absolutely, with both legs. I said, good. You know what concerns me about the race with Charlie Crist being like the white tiger coming in, the white knight? The fact that the Democrats really put a lot against him when he was governor and when getting ready to run against him for governor and also for the United States Senate. And I'm just wondering if that's going to bite the Democrats in the rear end and will it have any effect on the election? Because I know that the Republican Party has already started to republish what the Democrats said about Charlie Crist in some local media buys.
Well, I think if the Republicans have their way, they'll get and it ends up being Charlie Crist versus Nan Rich, that they'll do everything they can or they should do everything they can to help Nan, or muddy up Charlie enough that they can then use that same prevailing theme in the general election. You know, I was taking a look at it's one of the most recent polls, the Quinnipiac poll, and the thing is Rick Scott, now Charlie Crist does get, according to this poll, it was 75-13 Scott to Crist on the Republican votes. In a head-to-head. But what I would say to you is that Rick Scott's theory, and if you listen to everything that he's been saying, it's we got to get the base out. We got to get the Republican vote out because what Rick Scott knows is that's where his win is. If he gets that vote out, it was a plus seven, if my recollection is right. It was about a plus seven on the Republican side in that election, and it took it with a plus 7% points of Republicans to Democrats coming out to vote. He only won by 60,000. So he knows that his path of what he has got to do is he's got to get as many Republicans out, because if you look at the Crist versus the Scott at this point, and of course that, you know, it's not $50 million being slammed against Charlie Crist. On the Democratic side, Charlie Crist had 83% and Rick Scott had 8%. So it's like virtually no Democratic support for Rick Scott. And
Scott's support among the Tea Partiers has been waning. And
yes.
I think it's fascinating when I just read an article in the Huffington Post today that Tea Party has basically been disseminated. Their influence has been completely cut from under them. And without that base, I'm not sure that Rick Scott could get reelected.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, this is one of the reasons that there's lots of people that also were looking to Alex in addition to Charlie and looking to Bill Nelson. There is a feeling that in this state that you have these Democrats that have run statewide that can command some of the Republican vote. A larger amount of the Republican vote, enough that's needed where that can be the deciding factor. And I think that that's Rick Scott is trying to convince them, the Republicans, that he can commandeer back, he can get some of that vote back. But when you expand government, you give teachers pay raises, you do some of the things that Rick Scott, some of the positions that Rick Scott took in the last legislative session, in order to reach out to the other side and show that he wasn't quite as much as an ideologue as everybody thinks and I think as he is, you're going to lose some of that Tea Party support. And I think that that's his dilemma. But he, in his mind, I don't think that he thinks that they have any place to go.
Shelley, this is Jessica, Judge David's assistant. I have a question. Actually, I have two. One, does the fact that so many of Rick Scott's people having a fall from grace, particularly now, this year, does that affect him? And two, nationally, his polls rank him at the lowest of any like on any scale. His polls are horrible. At one point, they're at 29% favorability, which is the lowest in the country. Is that going to affect him?
Well, clearly, when your governor doesn't have a very high favorability rating, and what that means is that the people aren't happy and they're looking for a change. Clearly that impacts the governor. There's no doubt about that. I think I haven't looked recently, but I believe at one point he was the third most vulnerable governor in the state. I think Pennsylvania has the most vulnerable governor, but to be the third most vulnerable governor in the state is not something that you want to be proud of. So that's the piece. I think more of the fall from grace of so many of the people in his administration, I think that as it's going, when you run against an incumbent, what you need as the candidate to prove to the people is that it's time to fire that incumbent and to replace the incumbent. Both of the questions that you've asked go directly to that point, and clearly the problems in his appointees, as well as the problem that his lieutenant governor had, would seem to bolster that as well, that argument that it is time to fire the governor and replace him with the Democratic candidate.
Because didn't he run on the theory that he was the businessman? And if I recall, when he first ran, that was his thing. I'm not inside the loop. I can run a business. Well, you know, I beg to differ, first of all. But second of all, he gets elected, yet all his, I mean, like you said, his lieutenant governor and now the executives in his so-called business are failing miserably.
Yeah.
So it makes me question whether or not he can actually run a business. And again, that goes to a previous history, but speaking just as his placeholder as governor in Florida, makes me wonder what kind of a business he's running.
Right. Well, certainly you can't run, in many instances you don't run a government in the same way that you run a business. Many people that have tried and failed. But nonetheless, given that, you have there's a lot of facts and a lot of reason for voters to believe that it is time to fire the governor. And that is pretty much what I would think that the Democratic candidates are going to be talking about for at least, I would think, the first 6 months of the campaign. Now, and Nan Rich, if you look back on what she's been talking about that for a while. So I think...
Shelley, do you think that there might be another bunch of candidates out there that we're not talking about yet, like Lois Frankel or the mayor of Orlando or Kathy Fernandez Rundle, people that are just not within the public eye yet but would have a chance of capturing the Democratic vote out in the primary, which is normally a smaller vote turnout than the general election?
I don't know that there's anybody other than candidates that are kind of giving it a look to see if maybe this is something they could do. I know that there are a number that have done that. But what I would say to you is there are some really solid Democrats out there that could run for governor and or could run for those, the attorney general, could run for those statewide down ballot executive offices. I'd like to think, David, that Lois Frankel is really where she needs to be right now. I mean, the Congress, and I know we're talking about the Florida governor's race, but the Congress is such a mess that we need smart, savvy congresswomen up there who, I mean, Lois was the House Minority Leader. She understands how government and the legislatures work, and she needs to be up there.
Congress needs an enema, is what Congress needs. Just get rid of all the obstructionists. And, you know, and I think that we probably will, because I think that the public out there is so frustrated with the amount of childish behavior going on in Washington, D.C., that I think you're going to see a massive change in Washington come the 2014 election.
Well, and I'm fearful we won't. That's the problem. I'm fearful we won't because voters seem to be so short-sighted and short-memoried. Do you find that they are, Shelley, now?
Yeah. I mean, it's really, you know, everything moves so fast. Here's why I think we'll take back a number of seats, but I don't think we'll take back control. Here's the problem, and it's like a broken record. Those districts are gerrymandered in such a way that these people that are obstructing, that don't want immigration reform, that want to bootstrap women's rights, that don't want to end the gun violence by doing really anything or help end the gun violence by doing anything to have meaningful gun legislation in this country, it's because they are going to get reelected regardless of what they do, if they do nothing. I don't know if you're watching what's happening in Colorado, but they're going after the legislators in Colorado because they passed gun legislation. That's what's going on in this country. And people have to wake up and look at this and begin to demand more from their legislators.
So we only have a couple more minutes left. I know you wanted to talk about the Florida Water Land Legacy Campaign. Why don't you tell me what you're doing with that and how we can help?
David, this really dovetails into what we're talking about. Without regard to partisan politics, for 19 years, through Florida Forever and other legislation, Republican and Democratic governors alike, Republican and Democratic legislatures alike, have been funding Florida's important water protection and restoration projects as well as our land conservation projects. In 2009, that funding came to a screeching halt. And to date... Well, you could say initially it was probably because of the economy tanking, But the problem is that it's not been restored, and there is no inclination to restore it through this governor or this legislature. And so what it's become very clear to leaders in this state, including Bob Graham, who is a huge proponent of the Florida Water and Land Conservation Amendment, and the campaign is the Florida Water and Land Legacy Campaign. Bob Graham, our former governor and former senator, is strongly behind this, as are the major newspapers, who recognize that this is a citizens' initiative constitutional amendment that will restore the funding. What it's going to do is it is going to require that there be a designated fund to be used for water preservation and restoration and land conservation projects as enumerated in the amendment, and there's no new taxes. That the funding will come from one-third of the real estate documentary stamp taxes from real estate transactions, which was the traditional funding source that was used for all of these projects during Governor Martinez, Governor Graham, Governor Bush, when Charlie Crist was governor. And so there is no new tax, but they will set this aside because Floridians know if you don't have water, you don't have anything. And so so what we need your help. This is a citizens initiative, and what has happened is that the legislature has shortened the time for us to be able to collect signatures and get them on the ballot. And so we are looking for two things. Right now, this is an all-volunteer effort. We know that we will not make our November 30th deadline where we think it's our deadline where we feel we need to collect these signatures to have them validated to have them certified so that they can be validated by the Secretary of State on February 1st when the Secretary of State has to receive them. So I'm asking two things from you and your listeners, David. And the first is obviously go to the Florida Water and Land Legacy campaign website. That's www.floridawaterlandlegacy.org. Sign up to support it, print a petition, fill out the petition if you haven't already done one, and send it in. And while you're at that website, make a contribution. I don't care whether it's $5 or $25 or whatever, as much as you can make, and please post it on your Facebook page, send it to your friends in email. This is the people of Florida's opportunity to tell the legislature how the legislature is going to spend its money to protect Florida's environment. And
I think it's a great thing to do.
Well, I appreciate that.
I'll do anything you tell me to do. Let's just let everyone know.
Shelley
and I have known each other for many years, and I love this woman. She's terrific. Tell Alex Tink that if she needs a running mate, I'm available.
Okay.
Shelley, this is Jessica. I'm the producer of the show. We'd like you to come back and make an MP3 commercial, and we'll play it every show.
Oh, fabulous. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yes.
You're absolutely
yes.
welcome, and we'll be back in touch with you on that.
Okay.
Right now, we're going to take a break while Ms. Levin is saying her goodbyes to the judge. She is from Emily's List, and we are talking about the Florida Water and Land Legacy.org to sign up, because if we don't have water, fresh water in Florida, we are done for. You are listening to the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and this show is Justice with a Snap with Judge David Young. Just a reminder that these are copyrighted podcasts, and we welcome you to join us at 347-633-9609. Judge, what's happening next?
Well, I'm sorry,
hello,
we had
Judge.
A bad connection. Yes, hello.
That's quite all right. Can you hear us now?
I can hear you now.
Judge?
A question?
Okay. You're back on, Judge.
You know, Kelly Sachs Levin is just an amazing person. Her mother used to work for my father. That's how I know Shelley. And when she was working for Alex Sink, I was not fully committed to Alex Sink's campaign. There was another candidate that I was hoping was going to run, and Shelley convinced me to work with Alex, and, you know, she didn't run the type of campaign that I would have run, but you talk about an honest individual and a smart individual.
Yeah.
Alex Sink is terrific. The campaign
brilliant.
Against Rick Scott was a tough one, and I'm sorry that she lost, because Florida would have been a hell of a lot better under the governorship of Alex Sink than the crook that we have now, I think, is despicable. But anyway, so I thank you, Shelley, for being on the air. Florida Water Land Legacy Campaign.org is something that we need to get involved with. You know, Jessica, when we were in Tanzania and even in Ethiopia, they had bottled water in all the bathrooms. And they told you, do not drink the water. When you shower, keep your mouth shut so you don't ingest any of the water, because they have all these parasites. And they give you, you know, when you leave for Africa, you take all these shots, and you have to take these pills,
right.
The malaria pills, which I'm still taking. And if we don't watch ourselves in this country, the same thing's going to happen here.
Yeah, I think that there are several national magazines as well as international ones that say that Florida is at its most crucial point right now because of its lack of potable water, and that this will be the next big issue that we need to address in the state of Florida. Obviously, people have been talking about it, but no one's listening. So I agree with you. This is not an issue that should go away, can go away, nor on this show will we allow it to go away. Don't you agree, Judge?
Absolutely. And it's not a sexy issue. It's not an issue which gets people crazy like abortion does, or the death penalty does, or gay marriage does. This is a survival issue, and I think we need to start to focus our thoughts on something that's meaningful, something we can control before it controls us. And you know, this organization that Shelley has started, the Florida Water and Land Legacy Campaign, is something that we all should take a look at very, very seriously and get excited about, because it's our future. It really, really is. It's like education is our future. Let's talk about the Russian Olympics and what's going on in Russia.
Yes, I was going to say, let's go back to that, because that was the beginnings of a very interesting discussion that we were starting. And you had mentioned to our listeners that it is just amazing that Russia seems to be turning its nose and everything else up at not only America, but at the international community as well. For example, in the same month that Queen Elizabeth gave her blessing to gay marriage in England, Russia has turned its nose on gay individuals there, and to the point where they're being beaten in the street, and it's unbelievable, to the point where we ask for someone to be extradited back to the United States after they have been accused, not charged, of a crime, and were given guarantees to the Russians that there would be no torture, there would be no death penalty. Yet, not a week later, they allowed Edward Snowden, of course, into the country, where who knows what's going to happen to him. He may live a very happy life. He may not. So what's going on, Judge? What is happening over there? And what are we going to do about the Olympics that are going to be there soon?
Let me read an article that I found online, which really sums up the situation. And if you want to talk about the Olympic situation and LGBT, the non-rights of LGBTs in Russia and the protests going on all over the world, actually, feel free to call me at 347-633-9609. I'm Judge David Young, Justice with a Snap on the Blog Talk, Authors on the Air Radio Network. This is the article. You can totally be gay at the 2014 Sochi Olympics, according to Russia's sports minister, Vitaly Mutko. You just better not do anything that could be construed as propaganda in the presence of minors, or you shall be brought to responsibility. Referring to homosexuality only as a non-traditional orientation, apparently there is no word for gay in Russian, at least as far as the government is concerned. Mutko told the sports news agency that athletes wouldn't run into any trouble as long as they keep their gayness to themselves. Quote, "The law talks about not banning a non-traditional orientation, but about other things, about propaganda and implicating minors," Mutko said. No one is banning a sportsman with a non-traditional sexual orientation from going to Sochi. But if he goes onto the street and starts to make propaganda, then of course he will be brought to responsibility. As a sportsman, you should respect the law of the country, McGill added. Come to Sochi, but don't get young people involved. Don't make propaganda. That's what we're talking about. Mutko's comments came days after lawmaker Milonov contradicted the International Olympic Committee with news that Olympic athletes and spectators would not be exempt from the country's law against gay propaganda, or rather non-traditional orientation propaganda. Quote, if a law has been approved by the federal legislature and signed by the president, then the government has no right to suspend it, the legislator said. It doesn't have the authority. The law stipulates that anyone found disseminating information about homosexuality to minors can be fined up to 5,000 rubles, which is $156, as well as face 14 days of administrative arrest and eventual deportation. 2 weeks ago, four Dutch filmmakers became the first foreign tourists arrested under the anti-propaganda law after they were found interviewing a teenager for a documentary on the state of LGBT rights in London. They have since been banned from Russia for 3 years. A proposed boycott of the Sochi Olympics has been met with opposition by the Russian LGBT network, openly gay Olympian Johnny Weir, and activist Nikolai, I can't even pronounce the last name, Alekhev, who has instead endorsed a petition that would blacklist the lawmakers behind the anti-gay propaganda law from receiving entrance visas to the United States. Meanwhile, speed skater Blake Skillenrup said he will be wearing a rainbow pin in Sochi, though there's no word if Milonov, Mutko, Putin et al. Will consider that making propaganda. We guess as long as he's not introducing distance, within indoctrinating distance of any kids, he should be fine. You know,
sad.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And then, you know, then the issue is, what do you do about it? You know, do you want to punish men and women who've been training for a long time for these Olympics and say the United States and all countries who believe in freedom should not attend? Or do you do something else? And I think there's something else that's being done, Jessica, is the protests all over the world. I know there was a protest today in New York where they're going to dump Russian vodka into the streets, and there was a protest over the weekend in Toronto where they had thousands of people marching and boycotting all Russian products as a way of signaling to the Russian government, like, hey, listen, we know your economy is in the crapper right now. We're going to make it even worse because your basic import is vodka, and we all know that it's vodka, and without your vodka, you know, Putin would look, you know, what he looks like a miserable son of a bitch to people.
Well, we boycotted an Olympic already, one of the Olympics already. You're right. It's supposed to be the spirit of competition, a friendly competition. But when do you have to put that aside and say, this is not right?
Well, let me read what Johnny Weir had to say, and then I'll read some of the responses to his comment. Next year's Winter Olympics are set to be held in the Earth's Den of Iniquity, Sochi, Russia, to be exact. But that's not stopping a few powerful gay athletes from voicing opposition to a suggested boycott of the Games. Through his outward flamboyancy, could land him in a Russian prison under a new Russian law that forbids tourists from showing gay propaganda. 29-year-old Johnny Weir refused to hang up his figure skates in the face of bigotry. The decorated Olympian announced this week that he plans to compete next year. Weir said, the fact that Russia is arresting my people and openly hating a minority and violating human rights all over the place is heartbreaking and a travesty of international proportions, he said, but I will still compete. He noted that the last time an Olympic boycott was organized during the 1980 Summer Olympics in Moscow, the only people affected were the athletes that were denied the opportunity to compete. I respect the LGBT community full-heartedly, but I implore the world not to boycott the Olympic Games because of Russia's stance on LGBT rights or the lack thereof, he said. Weir is also encouraging other athletes, both gay and straight, to compete in next year's Games and ask fans to support the athletes. Quote, I beg the athletes not to forget their missions and fight for a chance to dazzle the world. I pray that gay people will believe in the Olympic movement no matter where the event is being held, because the Olympics are history, and they do not represent their host. They represent the entire world. Also on board to compete is openly gay Kiwi speed skater Blake something or other, who says he will be wearing a rainbow pin while in Sochi. For me, it's less about taking a stand and more about being myself, he said. I have no interest in going back into the closet and Sochi. This is not about defiance. This is me standing up for what I believe.
We have a caller. Let's see what the caller has to say. Would you boycott or not boycott, caller? You're on Justin with the Snap of Church, David Young. Boycott or no boycott? Hello?
You're on, caller. Yes.
Hello?
You're on. You're on the air.
You're on Justin with the Snap with David Young. Hello? Hello, hello? Can you hear us?
Yes, we can. You're on.
Hello?
Okay, well, that's not working out. Let's try that again. Okay, Judge, go ahead and continue.
Okay. So let me read some of the comments from some of the people after reading this article. I mean, I thought the comments were fascinating. One person wrote, Larkin, I think it's quite damaging to the athletes who's trained for years and spent untold thousands of dollars with the goal of getting to the Olympics. To flush that down the drain over their anti-LGBTQ policies and laws. I'm not sure what to think, but I doubt a boycott will do any good and will only harm the athletes competing. I'd much rather see them go and compete and violate the propaganda law and get arrested for gay propaganda, which actually would spark world outrage. I'd love to see an athlete winning and wearing anything gay pride while receiving their medal and an ultimate FU to the Russians, which would make a much bigger statement than any potential boycott could ever make. I think that's fascinating. Hmm. I think that's really interesting.
We're going to take this call. We'll try again.
Which may be our guest.
You are on Justice with a Snap with Judge David Young. Please go ahead, caller.
Well, good afternoon. This is Maribel Balvin. How are you, Judge?
How are you, Maribel? Thank you for being on the air with us today.
Absolutely. I've been listening to the show. And, it's only the second time I do so, but I will do that more often now, I can tell you that.
Well, we appreciate that very much, don't we, Jessica?
We're thrilled that you're here. Thank you so much for calling in. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Maribel Balvin from the League of Women Voters in Dade County, correct? Is it Dade County or are you of Florida?
I'm the Miami-Dade County president. You're correct.
The Miami-Dade County president. Okay. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Justice with a Snap, and we'll take it back to you, Judge.
You know, I wanted to have a nonpartisan, because some people say, David, you're so partisan, Democrat, Democrat, Democrat. You think the Republicans are a bunch of Neanderthals, backwards thinking. You're not objective. So I figured on this subject, the Voting Rights Act, which the Supreme Court thrust into the national spotlight again, who better than you to explain what the court did, why the court did what they did, and what are the ramifications. So why don't we do a little bit of history, Maribel? Can we do a little history on the Voting Rights Act?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you very much for inviting us to speak on this issue. And if I could just take a little moment, though, because I was listening to Shelley before I came on, and I wanted to let you know that the League of Women Voters, we don't, as a nonpartisan organization, like you mentioned, we normally don't take actions in when the collection of signatures is happening towards a constitutional amendment. We did so to the redistricting with that happening, and then we did collect signatures for that. And then now I want you to know that we are collecting signatures also for the legacy campaign, because it's so absolutely important that the lands are purchased to protect the water supply for the future, like you were saying. So I wanted to mention that, you know, the League is also part of this campaign throughout the state.
Excellent. That's terrific.
Yeah, we all do this.
Excellent.
No, it is true. I mean, what's different, like I said, is the fact that we normally don't get involved in this collection of signatures. And we voted at the state convention this year. This was such an important issue that we needed to be part of that, just making sure that the signatures are collected. So, and Shelley is doing an amazing job. And like you, I'm a fan of hers for many years. The reasons on the what happened with the Abundance Rights Act, Judge, and you obviously will know this even better than me, but the reason why the league specifically is so concerned with what the court did. We know that we have been, and the history and all the we've been reading lately, how many times even the Section 5 of the Act has been used in cases. Over 700 times have been used in order to settle a case, in order to bring rights to a particular community, a particular area, a particular person. The fact that the court now then says we're going to do away, and then we don't have that recourse anymore. The league has been...
If I can, there's a bit of history. Lyndon Johnson signed the act in 1965. And he signed the act because there was a problem with African American voters. They were being there were poll taxes, there were literacy tests. There were many discriminatory laws that kept the African American voters from voting, which inured to the benefit of the racist and bigots in the country who wanted to continue to take control. So the part of the Voting Rights Act in Section 5 address those issues. And what the court did, if I'm not mistaken, is they struck down Section 5, saying that it was not constitutional. Am I right?
Exactly. Well, it is. The fact is that Section 4, where the formula rests, now we don't have the formula to be able to then implement Section 5. So without the formula, we're left to just everybody pretty much doing whatever they want, which is what we've seen is happening already and immediately happened almost on the next day after the decision, where some of the states that have been told you can move forward started moving forward with a lot of the laws of voter IDs and all the other restrictions that they were putting in voters. So
Let me read, if I can, for a moment about Section 5. We have Steve Covey on the line as well, who's going to involve himself in this conversation. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hello, David. And Maribel, how are you doing?
Yes, Steve. How are you doing?
Good, good. I want you to know that Maribel is married to my fellow Irishman, Terry Murphy, and a very good friend. So,
who's a wonderful guy. Section 5 of the Act requires jurisdictions with significant histories of voter discrimination to pre-clear or get federal approval from the Department of Justice for any new voting practices or procedures and to show that they do not discriminate purpose or effect. The Department of Justice is charged with upholding and enforcing the Voting Rights Act. If the agency finds that a new voting practice or procedure has a discriminatory purpose or effect, preclearance will be denied, stopping the discriminatory law before it goes into effect. The DOJ can challenge discriminatory laws in court. And this is important because when you deal with the issue of redistricting, and this whole thing has to do with redistricting and limiting people's power, limiting the minorities from getting a hold of their piece of the pie. Like George Jefferson moving on up, the Voting Rights Act makes sure that happens. The Supreme Court said, no, we're really not happy with this formula. We need to send it back to Congress in order for them to come up with a better formula. And Maribel and Steve, that doesn't seem like it's going to happen, does it?
Well, no, I think you're going to see that Congress, especially the Republican dominated House, is going to resist any attempts because all the measures that are being put into place, voter ID laws, shortening voting hours, ending early voting, all benefit the Republican Party. I can't see, I mean, we had the head of the Republican Party in Pennsylvania who said the voter ID law that they enacted was going to ensure that Mitt Romney got elected. That law was prevented from going into effect by a federal judge, not under Section 5, but under other parts of the Voting Rights Act. But
you know what? What was puzzling talking about the Congress, though, I mean, in 2006, they reauthorized the act. It was a huge bipartisan vote on reauthorizing the act. They all talked about how important it was to still have this, how it was still needed to protect minorities that were, you know, would be deprived otherwise, especially language issues of minorities. This is only not that many years ago. So
seven
years later, the court says, oh, yeah, we can do away with it.
Well, you've got a much different Republican Party there now. You didn't have the Tea Partiers back then. You had an acknowledgement that, what is incredible is that you have a Supreme Court that normally would say you have to respect the process that the Congress went through, and we're not going to go behind Congress's fact-finding. But in this case, they went behind Congress's fact-finding and said, no, we don't believe what you found and what you made the determination on. It's our word against yours.
The one thing that has been talked about so much also is the fact that in George Roberts' opinion, he said that voting discrimination still exists. There's no doubt about that. But he still rules the way that he did.
When you look at legislative districts all over the country, you really get a chance to see what people think about minorities and how they want to pigeonhole them and discriminate against them, because they know that Hispanics, they know that African Americans, they know that LGBT are not the constituency of the people that are in power who are drawing the lines. And I think that is the biggest thing that, concerns me with the Supreme Court opinion, is that you have a bunch of Neanderthals in Congress who are going to say, we want to preserve our political power. So therefore, we're going to say, go F you, Supreme Court. Go F you, people. We're going to abide by the Supreme Court, and we're not going to enact any legislation. And there'll be no oversight by DOJ. Screw the blacks, screw the Hispanics, and screw the gay people.
Well, I think you're going to see that this whole thing may come back to bite some communities on the butt. State of Texas, for instance, thought that it would challenge the or bring to not the Justice Department, but the other alternative under Section 5 is to go to the district court in the District of Columbia and ask for a declaration that your plan does discriminate. Where Section 5 is unique is it's not the burden of the government to come in and show that you discriminate, or a plaintiff to come in and show you discriminated. The burden is on the party, the governmental entity that's making the change, to prove there is no discriminatory intent or effect. If you don't make that burden of proof, your plan's not, or your change isn't approved. What happened in Texas, though, is they went to court in the district court in D.C. They made a determination that, yes, these changes to the state of Texas's redistricting were intentional and rejected them. The DOJ is now going to Texas to sue and may very well end up succeeding in getting a court there to say this is the result of intentional discrimination. Section 3 of the Voting Rights Act still is in effect, and that's what's called the bail-in provision. If you can show that a government has engaged in purposeful discrimination, they get taken in and have to follow Section 5 for at least 10 years. So Texas may find itself back under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, even though the Supreme Court said Section 4's formula is out the window. So there's some hope. There's some hope. But what that's going to mean is that attorneys are going to have to get involved to start bringing lawsuits to show the discriminatory intent of different governmental bodies, which is really tough to do because, back in the 60s, you would have legislators standing up and saying, the reason we're doing this is to keep the black people from voting. You don't find that so much anymore. That people
are like, are you with what's going on in Louisiana? The Baton Rouge case. This is interesting. Last October, two residents sued the state of Louisiana for failing to produce new district lines for Baton Rouge City Court elections after the 2000 census showed that the city had become a predominantly African American. Three of the current judges are white and two are black, but the court composition is a reflection of a time when the city had a white majority. Right now, African Americans make up 55% of the city's population. So they try to go through legislatively to correct it, but the legislature in Louisiana said, screw you, baby, we're going to keep it just the way it is. And this lawsuit prevailed. And, they're saying, guys, that this lawsuit might be the one that further defines that Supreme Court decision.
Well, I think that it will, that courts are now having to decide, well, what did the Supreme Court mean? Did it mean, was this a signal that we can start ignoring the other parts of the Voting Rights Act? Section 2 prohibits discrimination, whether it has the effect of discriminating without any regard to pre-clearing, and can we start ignoring that? Prior to the adoption of Section 2, we did have a 14th Amendment effect stand or intentional discrimination standard, and then Section 2 brought us, does it have the effect? So we weren't worried about whether somebody intended this if it had the effect of. We might be going back to those bad old days of you've got to prove actual visceral hate on behalf of the governing body, and if they can somehow justify it, you know, even though you say we're combating voter fraud by requiring all these voter IDs, and even though voter fraud is only 0.01% of all votes cast, some judge may say, yeah, but it's a reasonable prophylactic to keep it from happening more, so we're going to allow it, even if it has the effect of disenfranchising.
But Steve, on Section 2, I mean, the fact that we do have Section 2 and the fact it's going to be really good for attorneys because, I mean, you can sue. I mean, Section 2 just lets you sue.
Right.
And if you're going to have to start filing suit instead of having this other process that was available under Section 4 and 5, it's a burden that not everybody can really endure. So we can go to court. I mean, and the legal women voters in Florida specifically, we've been in court more than we want to in the last year and a half over every single one of these issues, winning a couple of times only. But the beauty of having the rights protected under Section 5 is the way that you didn't even have to do to all this other process, and not everybody can afford either. The burden is much higher.
I over the course of my career as an attorney, I 10 years ago did up the submission by the state of Florida on the congressional and state senate plan. I didn't do it this last go round, but 10 years ago I did it. I've written proposals in Georgia and Mississippi and in other jurisdictions to prove that there was no discrimination. Some of it, you know, is a bit burdensome in that in one jurisdiction that I worked with, they moved a voting precinct because the church burned down where they were holding it across the street to another church in the church hall there, but they had to make this lengthy submission. You know,
let me ask you a question.
Sure.
When the legislature in the various states starts to divvy up lines for their own jobs, which seems kind of repulsive to me that they're creating lines to perpetuate themselves in office, do you think in the back of their minds they're thinking some white guys thinking, I don't want those blacks in my district. Where can we put all those blacks? We don't. All those blacks will vote against me, or all those Latins will vote against me, or all those homos will vote against me. Do you think that really those conversations actually being had in the caucuses of these individual legislators?
Well, there's some emails to prove it this time around in the Florida division of, drawing the districts, unfortunately. The league, we filed suit for both the congressional districts and the Senate districts. The Senate districts is where we had a ruling a couple of weeks ago where the legislature was actually blocking the league from filing suit in Leon County, because the Supreme Court had already looked at it. And the Supreme Court looked at it and said, no, it needs to go back to the circuit court. And we're going back to Leon County to look at the Senate district map because we feel that it violated what the intent was when we had the redistricting constitutional amendment. And the court sided with us on this one. But does it happen? It happened, and it happened when the Democrats were in power and they did it, and now it's the Republicans in power. And what you want to do, I don't think necessarily that you want to, you're saying, David, you want to keep those particular people out, but it's mostly which are the people you want in rather than what you want out, I think. And Cody would know better than me on that, but you're always looking at who are the ones that are going to be on your side, not the ones that you want to keep out.
But why don't we have a public reaction? Why doesn't the public say, how dare you people discriminate? How dare you carve these districts just to buttress your own political future so you can make more money off of us? Why isn't there more public outrage?
Well, part of it is when the Voting Rights Act came in, a lot of Republicans thought, well, gee, that's a great idea because the black population and, to a lesser extent, Hispanic population tends to be very urban. we can make a majority black district, which the black population, I mean, I've been working in redistricting going back into the 70s, used to be taken as like the yeast to make Democratic districts rise. You could give yourself a core of 30-35% black population. You knew that that was going to be 90-95% Democratic vote, regardless of who the candidate was. When the election was held, that's going to be 95% Democratic. And then you can build that district around it. With the Voting Rights Act and the move to bring in black districts, all of a sudden you started concentrating 85% black population and voting age population, and you open up vast white areas that suddenly became much more suburban, rural, and the country club type folks who started moving, you know, into the Republican column. So believe me, the Republicans 10 years or back in 2006 were happy to extend the Voting Rights Act because they figured that that was going to guarantee that the Republicans would be able to hold on to the districts that they had. They knew that they could always outvote the black districts. And, you know, the Hispanic districts are very, very small number in California and, you know, some in Florida. And, you know, maybe New Jersey and New York, a couple of in Illinois. And, you know, the gay vote is pretty much concentrated and focused in a few, you know, key areas in the country. There's not a whole lot of although surprisingly there is gay marriage in Iowa, but there's not a large politically active enclave of gay folks in, you know, Des Moines.
I guarantee you both there will be more of an outrage that A-Rod got suspended today through 2014 than about cases going on in Leon County with in front of Judge Terry Lewis.
I agree.
To bet my mortgage payment on that.
I'm not going to take that bet because I know you're right.
Unfortunately.
It is unfortunate. And, you know, thank God for the League of Women Voters, nonpartisan groups at all. All you want to do is make sure that justice is served, that every vote counts, that there is democracy, that everyone is treated fairly. We should all know what's going on and be as concerned as we are about A-Rod or about the Kardashians, which obviously I just saw the cover of the new National Enquirer magazine. More people are talking about that than about things that really matter that will affect their lives. And it frustrates the hell out of me.
David, you know, there's one issue that totally, like, talk about people not talking about it and what is so outrageous. And it is the way that we keep our, restoring our rights to those that have completed their sentences in Florida. There is almost 500,000 voters that cannot exercise their vote, the right to vote. They have already fulfilled their sentences. These are felonies. These are things. It's not like, you know, when you cannot get your rights restored at all. These are people that are on a list, and they will be on a list forever and ever because this governor has he went back, I don't know how many years, to where Charlie Crist had gotten to and how many people were being restore. But talk about a discrimination issue. Talk about a voting rights issue when it's 500,000 people that cannot vote in the state of Florida because their rights will not be restored because of whatever rules we have that are not.
You're
right.
So silly. That's because the skin is black and they won't vote for this governor anyway.
Well, that is part of it. But you know what? I met this woman. She had completed her sentence. She was going to law school, and she was finally given her rights were restored right before taking the bar exam. And this was signed like a couple of weeks ago, and she took her bar exam. These are people that are going to law school. These are people that have totally, redone their life. They have completed and done everything they're asked for to do, but they will still not because this is the process that we have in Florida. I mean, other states, the minute you come out of jail, your rights are restored automatically. It's an automatic restoration. We don't do that in Florida.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a future show. If people want to get involved in the League of Women Voters, locally, statewide, or nationally, how would they do that?
Well, let me first say that we are obviously a 93-year-old organization, and our founders were the women that got women the right to vote in 1920, the same group that worked in getting the rights, formed the League of Women Voters. There is 700 chapters across the country. We're almost 200,000 members. And in Florida, there's 37 chapters, and in Miami-Dade County, our membership is about 140. We would love for people to come to our website, www.lwvmiamidade.org. We have a whole new group of younger. It's like we want to say it's not your grandmother's league anymore. And we're trying to get people excited about just what you were saying. You know, these things are important. How do communities get involved in what is important to them? I mean, Miami-Dade County right now, how do we save these libraries? We're involved with that, and lots of people are getting excited and coming to the league, to our meetings, and we are very thankful for that.
Now, say they live in Georgia, or they live in Destin, Florida. We have listeners from all over the country. They can just Google League of Women Voters and get it active. It's not a Democrat or a Republican or independent or a libertarian organization. It's non-party affiliation, am I correct?
The League is a non-partisan organization as a 501c3. We do not support candidates, but we do support issues. So there are certain issues that we totally can get behind after a consensus process and I think and voting and all that, but we do are allowed to support certain issues. So, yes, if somebody Googles League of Women Voters, it will probably take you to the national website, and depending on where you live, you can find what league is close to where you're at, and you can join or just visit us and check us out.
Please, it's an incredible organization. I want to thank you for your time. Can we have you back again?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. This has been fun.
Thank you so much, and we'll definitely be in touch. And give Terry my best, please.
Absolutely, Dave. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Stephen.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Good. So talk to me about this Russian situation, the Olympics. Should we boycott or should we not boycott? It's the Winter Olympics. They're not having diving. They're not having water polo. So it's really not that much of an interest for me.
Well, yeah, but they've got figure skating. And,
please, if I want to see a bunch of figure skaters, I'll just go on Lincoln Road on a Saturday night.
Well, that's true. But, I think that, you know, Russia is being brought back under the thumb of the Russian Orthodox Church, which in its own ways is just as repressive as the communists were. They want a certain orthodoxy, if you'll pardon the expression, of thought, word, and deed. And, homosexuality is something that they absolutely will not stand. And having, you know, a president who is overcompensating by running around shirtless and whatnot.
Do you think this is the first step to what happened in Nazi Germany? Because their economy is so bad over in Russia that they're going to start scapegoating everybody?
I think that you definitely have a danger of that. That it's not so much the economy, but as a way to ensure political uniformity. It's very easy for, just like with the Jews in Germany, for the Russian oligarchs to point and say, all your problems are being caused by the homosexuals. And if we can somehow deal with them, repress them, I don't know if you saw the video that surfaced of some skinhead thugs that tricked a young man to meet with them and then just beat him up on videotape, a young gay man.
Yeah, I saw that.
And
we have a call. Let's use online. You're on Adjusted with the Snap with Judge David Young and Steve Cody. How are you? Hello? Are you on? You're on the air.
786-404. Hello? On the air once, on the air twice. On the air twice. Hello? Bye. All right. I saw that video. That was disgusting. That was disgusting, and it was just made me sick.
And unfortunately, you're only getting encouragement from that. You know, the government is taking the stance of course you're going to be prosecuted. Of course you're going to be persecuted. I would love to see every American athlete who got up on the stand in front of millions of people. You know, in 68, I don't know if you remember, there were a number of black athletes that were condemned because in Mexico City they raised their fist in a salute during the national anthem. I would love to see all of our athletes, gay, straight, or undecided, do something up on the stand to show their solidarity with.
If they want to fly me over and make out with me, that's fine. I have no problem doing that. Scott might have a problem with me doing that, but I just would have no problem doing that. No, I really do. I think one of the thoughts that I read from one of the articles, that if we, you know, an economic boycott is going to be very little, but if we show the world that we're not going to, you know, that we're not going to sit by quietly, and that we do some type of protest during a medal ceremony, what are they going to do, arrest all the athletes? Or when they have their opening ceremony, hold hands, do something, you know, that would violate that statute in Russia. Russia's going to be powerless, and it's going to really show the people how impotent their leaders are, and it could start a revolt.
Well, you know, how about getting all the athletes to wear a pink armband during the opening ceremonies? A rainbow armband. Nothing more than that. And let the Russians stew over the fact that you have people expressing. Well, I mean, and frankly, that's the one thing that dictators, left, right, or whatever, can't stand is someone challenging them. It was quite a, you know, finger stick in the eye for Hitler and his master race to have Jesse Owens go over there in the 36 Berlin Olympics and beat all of those blonde-haired, blue-eyed Aryans.
Yeah, that was pretty remarkable.
And that's why I think that if we have gay athletes over there.
Do you think that the protests will be effective at all, the economic protests, or do you think that's just a lot of noise?
No, I mean, the problem is that the Russians right now are sitting on top of so much oil. They are, their internal economy is in not that great a shape, but they make most of their hard currency, not even from tourism, but from exporting of natural resources. And so unless the entire world gets together, OPEC, led by all those Arab countries, is certainly not going to say, yes, we're going to stand up for the rights of, you know, all people. They're still beheading people for a number of things, including being gay or, you know, adultery, stealing. They just pardoned a young Dutch woman who reported a rape in, I think it was Saudi Arabia, who was being threatened with a 2-year jail term for reporting the rape because she had sex outside of marriage. And under their tradition, you can only a rape charge would only be considered if it was witnessed by, I think, 4 Islamic males. So how many times?
I'm going to read a couple of the responses from people to this article. I wouldn't presume to tell a young athlete that has worked her or his whole life that they shouldn't participate in the Olympic Games because the host country has a jerkwad for a leader. However, I feel 100% at peace with myself when I say that I won't watch or support said games in any way, and I will encourage all my friends and allies that aren't Olympians to do the same. Someone else wrote, so Stoli is loudly outspoken over their distaste of the Russian politics, and they're making clear that they support the LGBTQ community. I have to think that it's important for the gay athletes to show their face in the competition. Boycotting would likely not do much, but it seems to me that the Russians like a good fight, and so do I. I'd rather be represented than not. Let's put Ware and the other queers in their land and hope they kick Russian ass. But this is an interesting one. I can't stand the guy anymore. He sounds clueless about the plight of the LGBT community in Russia, or at a minimum, tone deaf. This guy is disgusting. He's butchered so many animals in his lifetime just so that he can look fierce. Guys like him don't deserve the time of day. So, you know, even within the LGBT community, there is conflict. Is he the right spokesperson? Should we boycott? Should we not boycott? But I think you're right. I think that what we should do is just throw it in their faces. You know, living good is the best revenge. And although one side of me says, you know, let's boycott Russia, let's boycott the Olympics, let's say, hey, listen, we're not going to lay down for human rights. We stand up for human rights. the other side, you know, maybe make this a teaching moment for the people of Russia who'll be watching the Olympics. Let them see that there are gay athletes, that there are gay lawyers, that there are gay doctors, and that, you know, it's offensive to me that they say that the premise is that all gay people are going to want sex from young boys and young girls. That's all about being gay is all about, you know, trying to get young people to have sex with them. Sex, sex, sex. These people are so worried about corrupting young people.
Well, it's kind of like Rick Santorum. Well, focusing so much.
Exactly,
you know,
right.
He was quoted as once as saying, "If you spent as much time thinking about gay sex as I do," and then you know, I just kind of laughed after I heard that part of the quote. But I think that what I'd love to see NBC do is send Rachel Maddow as one of the people covering the Olympics. Everybody who's prominent in, you know, the American LGBT community over there.
Anderson, let's send Anderson Cooper.
Sure.
Let's send David Young. Let's send Ellen. You know, there's so many people we could send over there. We can have just a big love fest.
Right.
Let's get Putin in the bathroom, you know, trying to get it with Larry Craig. That'd be great. Now, have you ever seen Larry Craig and Putin at the same place at the same time, I ask you?
Well, I think they probably both have wide stances, if that's what you're getting at.
I think they do, and I think that they all like George Michael, too, whatever that's about.
You know, I just think that anybody who spends as much time as Putin does loudly proclaiming his masculinity, it's like the old quote, I think it was from Hawthorne, the more that he
yes.
spoke of his honor, the quicker we counted our spoons. Or either that or from Shakespeare, "Methink the lady doth protest too much." One of the two.
Yeah, I think it's all that vodka they drink there, Steve. You know, they get so shit-faced, they don't know which end is up, literally.
Well, yeah, I mean, but they're a culture, a very brutal culture. If you've ever read about life in the Russian military, getting beaten by your fellow soldiers for no particular reason is something that happens regularly. We used to do that in our culture when people who were different got into the army. It was tough for African American soldiers after the integration. It still wasn't easy after that, but eventually people got used to it. I think what it's going to take in Russia is for somebody who is gay to stand up, who's in a powerful position. Yeah.
No question. Yeah.
Or
the gay community in Russia, and there is a significant gay community in Russia, the Russian people, you don't wait a year from now for an Olympics to make a stand on a law that's absolutely, unbelievably wrong. You don't wait until people are put to jail and tortured in jail before you denounce a law that they have over in the Soviet Union.
The international community should be joining together. The human rights community should be joining together and saying, Putin, this is just not right. You do not imprison someone for sexual orientation. And you don't even have the word gay in your vernacular in Russia. They don't use that word. They use unusual sexual orientation. Well, at least they didn't say sexual preference. But I think it's incumbent upon our elected officials to act now, not only for the Olympics, act now. Act in 2013 on August 5th. Flood them with petitions. Put international pressure. Have celebrities come out and just lambast Putin and the repressive regime. Stop traveling over there to Russia. Cut off all their aid. You know, there's so much we can do, because Russia right now is not the giant it used to be. It's a little midget at this point.
No,
with
but
a big mouth, and I find it personally insulting.
Well, it's a regional actor. It's not so much an international actor, but it still has a lot of influence in Europe. It still has, Russia borders a large number of countries from the Orient all the way, you know, to the Middle East and then up into Europe. Some of those countries are going to be successful, perhaps, in having those condemn. You know, Europe would certainly, I'm sure, come forward and their athletes as well, taking a stand. If something could be organized where you got the athletes in countries like Germany, France, but, you know, Take a country like France that's going to pieces over the idea of gay marriage. There's a large conservative Catholic group that is opposing what France has done. But you get England, you get Germany, if you can get France, Spain, believe it or not, is becoming a bit has a very active gay community, even though the Catholic Church opposes that. And you get each of those countries to make the same kind of stand that we should be making, because it's not going to be done by the U.S. alone, what we think. But the countries that do trade with it, the Japanese.
Steve, my internet just went down, so if you talk for a couple seconds, let me get back on.
Sure. Okay. But I think that if we can organize with these other countries that border Europe. We used to have a theory of containment when it came to the Soviet Union. If we surrounded them with missiles, we could somehow keep communism from spreading. Well, perhaps what we should do is have a similar kind of strategy of engagement and engage the countries around it. Turkey, probably we're not going to be able to have a whole lot of success there. And maybe not in, you know, a country like Albania, but the other countries of Europe, Japan, Australia, you know, countries that are going to be sending large contingents of athletes to the games, to have them make it aware that as a world, we're not going to put up with this. And as you say, there aren't enough jail cells in Sochi in Russia to hold thousands upon thousands of athletes who take a stand during the medal ceremony. So the effect that would have would, I think, rock. But that's something that can be done in 2014. Perhaps, and I'd be interested in hearing from not only David, but any of the callers who want to call in. We've even gotten some Republican legislators, Ileana Ross-Leighton, a friend of mine and actually, for purposes of disclosure, a former client, has become a participant in the No Hate campaign, perhaps getting prominent members of our congressional delegation to say that what they're intending to do is wrong. But that will be something that we'll have to work down the road. This is Justice with a Snap with Judge David Young. I'm Steve Cody. David's internet is down for a minute or so. So I'm using up his airspace, but don't worry. I'm not using up his air supply. Well, thank you. Thank you. I was vamping. Felt like I should have been at a piano just playing the same series of chords over and over again. But I don't know if you heard. My suggestion was that now is the time to start organizing with the folks in the countries that surround Russia and that are going to be sending large contingents, like Australia, like Japan, all of Europe. And if every one of those delegations indicates their displeasure and challenges the Russians, they're not going to be able to. I mean, if they end up deporting every athlete but a Russian athlete, then these games will be a joke, and the International Olympic Committee would make sure that they not do that. They would be the ones to step into Russia and say, knock it off. And Russia would have to listen to them because, you know, while Russia is paying for all the improvements and venues and all that nonsense, the IOC is the one who sanctions the games. And if Russia indicates that it's going to be too harsh on people, they could de-sanction the games, or at least the games like the prior Soviet games during the Afghan War. All the records there come with an asterisk because America didn't compete. Just like the games that we had where the Russians didn't compete and they boycotted. So, but are you back, David?
No, I'm not. For some reason, there's something going on here.
Okay. Well, David's still having problems, to those of you who can still hear me. He has an issue with probably Comcast, because God knows I'm always having problems with my Comcast. But then when I had my internet connection with AT&T Bell South, I had similar things. When it looked stormy, when it looked rainy, we would often have a intermittent downtime. But
just sign off and say goodbye, and we'll see you next week.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, in light of the technical issues that we're having, I'd like to thank the Maribel Balaban for being on, the head of the Miami-Dade League of Women Voters. And I'd also like to thank Ms. Levine, who was on to discuss the future election here in Florida. And on behalf of Judge David Young, who I can hear in my ear, but you can't hear, thank you for tuning in, and we will see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
Stupid-ass computer.
Yeah. But, well, it's funny. I don't know if you've ever run across a woman by the name of, or who runs a blog called Eye on Miami.
I think so.
But, yeah, she ran a story about, you know, Natasha and I writing this book together. And somebody made a comment on that, you know, about how evil and terrible Steve Cote is. And by the way, he's very anti-LGBT and has been for years. And I was like, really? I didn't know that about myself.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
this whole world is crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, the fact that I'm...
co-hosting with me is
well, you'll
have to
whatever I have, they will figure you've now got. You know.
Okay.
So
I should be so lucky.
But,
thank you, my friend.
My pleasure. And when the book that's coming out in I think August 18th, I will send you a copy. The book about bullying, my secret superpower. And
I think that's great.
You take care, and I will keep tuning in.
And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, sir.
Thanks. Bye-bye.